Welcome to 2 Men in the Middle, Democracy in Flyover Country. From here, we'll discuss today's topics from a Midwestern perspective with our boots firmly on the ground in a red state. I am Mike McCammon.
And I am Craig Huey.
This week's topics, The March of Our Lives and Laura Ingraham, and then maybe a couple other sundry little things. But we'll go ahead and get started with the big March for Our Lives that happened on Saturday in Kansas City. We had a pretty good showing. Did you go?
I didn't, but I saw some stuff. I heard about 5,000 people were there.
You know, it's hard to estimate, and I saw a lot of people coming and going.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think 5,000 is a pretty good estimate. I know the folks that run the Facebook page said that almost 10,000 people said that they were going to go.
Okay.
So, over the course of an afternoon, I'm sure there were people coming and going. Good showing. I won't tell you that story, but it's been, it was good. I enjoyed it. I'll tell you, we don't want to talk much about the campaign, but we made a very deliberate decision to go there as just people that are living here.
You didn't actively try to campaign at that or anything?
Yeah. I didn't like walk around, hand out cars. I mean, there were other candidates that were there doing it, and I thought it was a little distasteful, but we were there just to support, you know, that cause and that issue.
And I think they said at the mall in Washington, they had about 600,000.
Yeah, I saw as high estimate as of 800,000.
Okay, so I saw that too.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of folks. And L.A., Chicago all had gigantic outputs for that.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm kind of impatient. I'm kind of like an impatient millennial. It's already Thursday. Like, have we got anything done yet? Because it was back on Saturday.
Well, you know, it's pretty easy to amend the Constitution. John Paul Stevens, the retired Supreme Court Justice, came out and said, hey, literally in his op-ed, he said the phrase, easy to repeal the Second Amendment.
Well, I mean, yes, it's technically easy.
No, it's really not.
Well, no, you just got to get 38 states to pass something through their House.
You just got to get two-thirds of the states to agree on something.
Some people would say that the easiest way to get something amended in the Constitution is do a constitutional convention. Which is basically like, and no one wants to do that because they're afraid of what would happen.
Yeah.
But the idea is you get all the states together, they send a delegation, and you can kind of do it kind of like speed dating way.
Well,
as opposed to like going through
that. You're right. The odds of all hell busting loose at that, and we pass or do something that nobody wants, that's probably pretty high.
You know, I tell you, I mean, most of those folks, some of the folks listening to the podcast live in Kansas, but it's just been a total shit show over at the state house in our state. There was a law that they were trying to get passed that was going to basically allow, adoption agencies to refuse services to people based upon their strongly held religious views.
Yeah.
Which basically this is the cake battle. But they were going to use adoption as a place. So the cake battle, you know, the folks that, the guy that owned the cake shop, the gay couple came in. They sued him because he wouldn't make him a cake.
He wouldn't bake the cake.
Well, because of religious reasons. Well, this is basically that exact same problem, but they were trying to use the adoption services, you know, angle as a way to kind of like discriminate against people just because of their, you know, whatever their lifestyle or whatever.
So I'm not tracking. So if you...
Well, I'm not an expert on this either. But
so they wouldn't allow you to adopt a child.
What I'm saying is that it was going to allow adoption agencies to discriminate based upon their strongly held religious beliefs.
So if you're gay and you try to adopt a child, the agency could discriminate against you because their religious beliefs don't support your lifestyle.
And then the other part of the craziness this
last
week,
year is it again here? I'm struggling.
You know, the good news is that when you go to Topeka, you get into a time machine first and you go back 50 years in time. You know, it's kind of crazy. Like, so there was that law, and then the other one, well, actually it wasn't a law, but I think it went to the House. The other one was this, they were going to pass a law that was going to basically make school districts allow teachers to have guns in schools. And like, they were going to, I don't even know what they were going to do. It was this crazy idea around there was the insurance company that insures most of the school districts in the states.
Yeah.
They passed this law to let teachers and guns in the school. We weren't going to insure you. And then they were going to pass a law that was going to require, it was insane. Now, of course, earlier today, I happened to meet a gentleman who is in the, it was interesting to mention Topeka and going back in time. What a cool dude. He, his family is connected to the Brown versus Board of Education case.
She just died.
Yeah, she just did die. Yeah. I think her name was Karen. Or whatever.
Yeah, like Wednesday like this week.
But his parents were involved. He's a family of African descent, and they were talking about how You know, he was kind of involved in all that. I mean, at least yeah. from a kid's point of view, seeing the whole thing, because his parents were involved with that on the other side of it. So pretty cool.
So the march, you know, there's hundreds of thousands, there's a million people that marched.
It's already Thursday, so why don't we have some new laws or a new constitution right now?
Did you see any of the main speakers from Parkland in D.C.?
I kind of watched a little bit of it. You know, I was kind of, and to be quite honest, I'm a little OD'd over, you know, a lot of stuff these days.
So I'm getting fatigued a little bit too on this topic. You've got it for other reasons, but I think for just people who consume news and who follow it, there's a lot going on. There has been a lot going on, and some of it's getting repetitive.
You know, and I hate to say it, and I don't mean to not celebrate what these kids have done. You know, if I'm watching that, you're not convincing. I mean, there's nothing new that you're going to convince me of.
No,
I mean,
there is not.
I'm already on your team.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, you know, what's the point of going to the pep rally at high school before the game? It was like, okay, I'm already on your team. It's not like you're going to change my mind or something.
And I think what's interesting is when you ask these kids, what do they want? They want an assault rifle ban. You and I are pretty much on record of saying, yes, we both would support an assault rifle ban. So I'm not trying to soften my position on guns or gun control, but I did take a look at some alternative research this week. I almost said alternative facts, I guess.
I'll go ahead and let you do that. I'm going to tell you, I was going to surprise you. Yesterday I met with the chief of police of Overland Park.
I bet he's got an opinion or two on gun control.
And it was really interesting, but I'll let you do your statistics first.
So I've been on this kind of internet research kick to when somebody says, you know, hey, these kids, an assault weapon ban would do nothing. And these kids are uninformed. They don't understand the issues and they're just being used as pawns in this conversation.
Right.
Where does that come from? And how would you, if I suddenly flipped positions and said, I'm going to show you why a ban on assault weapons or this whole march is not going to accomplish anything, even if you got exactly what you wanted.
So you're basically what you're doing. You were doing competitive research to understand, like, assume I'm on the other side of
correct.
This. Correct. And how can I find a grain of like logic that lets me stay in this
absolutely.
Position?
If I wanted to make an intelligent, thought-based argument against gun control and against what's been happening around the Parkland kids specifically, how would I do that?
Fire away.
So you're gonna give me some more encouragement before I went down this hole.
No, I was just gonna okay, everyone, you know, take your notos.
Great.
Here comes Professor Huey.
Yeah, this should be stunning. Oh, and by the way, if you really want to get yourself depressed at work, look up the Gun Death in America Wikipedia page and spend an hour perusing that. That'll do
now
it
you
to know, you.
You wouldn't have done that at work, though, would you?
Lunch.
Lunch.
I did this over lunch. So one of the things we've talked about, there is no real study out there on gun violence and how guns impact the United States. What I found was a study by the CDC of death certificates from 2012 and 2014.
Right.
And so this is just an analysis of people that died via guns, gun violence, gunshot. Everybody kind of lopped into one pool
we're going to look at the pie chart of
correct.
Of deaths
absolutely.
By guns.
So we average 33
in the United States.
In the United States, we average 33,000 fatal gun deaths a year. 33,000 people are fatally shot with a gun in the United States each year. So what gets the most attention? What gets the most press coverage? Are mass shootings, terrorism, and police shootings.
Right.
If you think about the news you consume
all bad,
on guns,
all bad.
Those are the three main areas that we focus on when we focus on guns. Okay, so let's add some pies to that pie chart. So this is the first one that's a little bit, I was surprised by this.
Slices, not pies.
What did I say? Pieces of pie?
You said you're going to add pies to
the
pie
chart. Mike, I don't know how you eat pie, but when I eat pie, I go at the whole pie.
No, not to go into a big, long, little Debbie tangent here.
Hostess fruit pie.
Well, no, but you know, it would be, why hasn't someone come up with like layered pie? You know, if you think about like, you know, have like a cake, you know, they cook a cake. And then they frost it, and then they cake. You know, they like a multi-layer chocolate cake or something. Why isn't someone coming with that for pies? So, like, you have a pie. And
strawberry, blueberry, apple, all layered together.
No. there's an apple on the bottom. I'd have to think about the exact flavors here, but you probably want to put in like a banana cream and then like strawberry. But they would be like, it's like a pie. It's like a.
So for anybody who doesn't know Mike and I, you've got to think we each weigh 400 pounds. As much as we talk about food and Little Debbie's and consuming.
We do probably weigh more than 400 pounds together.
Combined, yeah. But for men our age, we're in decent physical shape.
You know, speak for yourself.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me about the pies, pieces of the pie.
I was giving myself the benefit of the doubt. Okay, so... Here's where things start getting interesting. 63% of those deaths are suicides.
Wow.
So 2/3 of the people who are killed every year in the United States with a gun take their own life. Okay? 85% of gun suicides are male.
Right.
So that chunk of people that take their life by guns, this is a phenomenon that mostly hits males. And the largest age group is men over 45, and the largest ethnic group is white. So just let that digest for a minute.
Wow.
Most people that die from a gun die from suicide.
Now, what some people say, well, that's their own fault because they're pulling the trigger kind of thing.
Sure, but just digest that number. Most people that die from a gun die from suicide. The biggest group of people that commit suicides are with a gun are white males.
Wow. So keep going. There's a couple other stats you have.
There's a couple other one of these that are pretty interesting. So when it comes to suicide, the most commonly tried method for suicide is drug overdose.
Right.
It is successful in about 3% of suicides. Guns are successful in 85% of the suicides that a gun is used. This gets back to, again, when somebody tells you guns don't kill people, you hold your hand up, you stop, and you say, kind sir or madam, guns absolutely do kill people because they're the most effective tool at ending somebody's life.
Right.
They're way more effective than pills. They're more effective than hanging, stabbing. Just by the nature of what a gun is, it's very effective at killing human beings. Same study. There's about 12,000 homicides each year. Half of those are young men ages 18 to 24. And of that half, 2/3 of them are black.
Right.
When we come to women, 1,700 women on average are killed a year by a gun. The vast majority of these are in domestic violence.
Yeah, you expect that.
If you're a woman and you're not in a relationship with a man, your odds of getting killed by a gun are very, very slim.
Right.
In 2012, there were 8,855 homicides. 71% of them used a handgun.
Wow.
So think of that. Almost 3/4 of every homicide. That's actually higher because there's a bunch of these things too in this study that the gun was unclassified.
Right.
So let's just say again, 3/4 of all homicides in 2012 were with a handgun. I could not find the stat for handguns and suicide, but it has to be that high or more.
Yeah, I would assume.
By contrast, 2006 to 2017, there were 271 mass shootings, a total of 1,358 victims, or about 123 people killed in a mass shooting event a year. Now, sad to say, 2018 will probably break that average.
And it's all sad to see, of course.
But this is where if I'm on the other side of the argument and I look at the kids marching, and when you ask those kids what they want a ban on assault rifles. That's the main crux of the policy change that they want. If I'm sitting on the other side, I can tell you then, well, that's not a serious position if your goal is less gun deaths and less gun violence.
Do you think the folks you're trying to
channel?
Yeah, be the actor of. Do you think that they're thinking that way, or is it just basically knee jerk reaction, Second Amendment, don't mess with my guns?
I think it's maybe they've been hit so much by this argument. And you've seen it from the Parkland kids calling people, the NRA, child killers, and you have blood on your hands, which is a total crap argument. That's not helpful. It's not true. And that kind of rhetoric shouldn't be used. Right. When you've had to put up with that after, I think, for so long, that's where you come with, hey, if you, one, were serious about ending or lowering gun violence, you would be concentrating on white men over 45 who killed themselves with a handgun.
Wow.
because that's where you would go to make the most, the biggest difference for the population that's killing themselves the most with a gun.
Right. You know, I'm going to surprise you with some anecdotes that I heard as I was meeting people this last week. So, you know, I asked, so I met with a couple of chiefs of police in the area.
Yeah.
And I asked one of them, I guess, I don't know if I should want to share all these details, but with one of the meetings I had, I asked that person, I'm like, you know, what's the biggest, you know, issue in our district when it comes to policing?
Yeah.
Policing. And he, without hesitation, mental health.
Yeah.
Mental health. He said that, you know, he goes, you know, if there's a guy wandering around one of the major thoroughfares at 3 o'clock in the morning naked, you know, because he's got a, or she, well, he's got a mental health issue.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a system to deal with that. So like we get, we roll and then, you know, I guess, you know, he's, as in his words, he said, you know, the guy's not a perv. You know, but
what,
he,
what do you do?
Because but we have to arrest him for indecent exposure and then put him so he gets a night of jail. He gets he gets a good place to sleep for the night.
Yeah.
And then we have to push him back out the next day.
So what?
And then the other thing he said, and I don't, and I'm not going to thread this very artfully.
Yeah.
But the thing you just brought up and then connecting a couple of dots here, suicide is a mental health problem.
Absolutely.
It is someone who is depressed,
yep.
who, you know, whatever the case is. So, so in reality, a lot of those deaths are actually mental health related.
I would say most of them are. Suicide at all is also an act of opportunity.
Right. Cause if you have a weapon, is that what you're
Absolutely.
Saying?
Absolutely. They're where the suicide rate is the highest among adult white men are in the Western states. I think Wyoming actually has the highest. Because again, it also has the most access to firearms.
I wonder what the, I'm sure the data is out there someplace. I wonder what the vector is on veterans.
I don't know, but I would think it's high.
Yeah. You know, it's, so anyway, so we were talking about mental health. The other thing that was interesting at one of these meetings, I asked them, you know, what should we do about all this gun violence? And of course, you know, they all kind of say like, you know, obviously you're not going to take people's guns away. And we kind of joked that like, okay, you know, hey, I'm going to show up to this person's house. We need to remember that they're armed. Okay?
Yeah.
And they don't want to give them up.
Yeah.
He said, you know, he goes, what would most likely happen is they would dig a hole in their backyard and put a crate back there and say, come on in and look at all of our guns. And they'd all be in a crate.
Yeah, you can't.
In the backyard.
Gun confiscation is not going to happen.
And I asked about a BIPAC program, said that's not true. That won't work. I also found out in the state of Kansas, get this, it is illegal for police departments to like confiscate or be recipients of weapons and melt them down. They cannot
really?
Destroy, they cannot destroy a gun. It's against the law in Kansas to destroy a gun. So here's what they do. So if like let's say, you know, old lady living down the street, her husband passes away,
yeah.
She's a widow. Her husband had some guns in the house. She says,
she doesn't
want
them.
I don't want them. She brings them into the police department. Okay, thinking, okay, well, they'll just get rid of them, right? Well, in this one place that I went and visited this week, I was told that what they do is they can't destroy them because it's against the law in the state of Kansas. So what they do is they basically go to like a clearinghouse, like an eBay kind of
thing. They go to a gun show.
They sell them there for money that they can use to buy the things they really need.
Did you ask the follow-up question? Why can you not destroy a gun in Kansas?
It's against the law.
But why?
Well,
why?
This person is a police officer who's there to uphold the law.
But the logical follow-up question is, sir, that makes no sense to me.
Well, I didn't ask that question, but based upon the fact that it was brought up in the conversation, I assumed that they felt that that was pretty stupid.
I would think so.
The other thing that I found out was also interesting is another story I was told is that one of the people I met with this week, may or may not have been in the police department, suggested that the best thing we could do for curbing violence with guns is to make it a 30-year mandatory offense or sentence if you commit a crime with a handgun, in the act of having a handgun. And he said, you know what, the thing is, what would happen, you know, he goes, a lot of times, I mean, if you're just crazy, you know, like there's no sentence or law that's going to stop you.
No.
Okay? That's just a fact. But there are people that at a moment of rage, if they think about it for an instant, hey, this is 30 years in jail. Like they may not do it. Just like the way DUI kind of works in a lot of cases, the people that are,
yeah,
that are not dumb probably don't do that kind of stuff. And what he was talking about, and actually was interesting, he said that the most common gun offenses that they get in this part of town is road rage. So I could see that. Some guy cuts me off.
And I got one under my seat. Off, and here we go.
I pull one out of the glove box. And I pop a couple rounds off of the car next to me because I'm pissed off. And it's like, okay, he says, you know what? If that person knew, hey, that's 30 years mandatory in jail. He says, I don't think they're going to pull that handgun out of the glove box and pop three rounds off the car next to me.
This is why I would never do a concealed carry, because that would be the exact scenario that I would get arrested for. Somebody would cut me off in my car. Somebody would do that. And I'd just take the gun out and just hold it out the window. Like, really? I think they call that brandishing a weapon.
That is called brandishing.
Yeah. Somebody told me that was actually illegal. I'm like, well, why carry it then?
Well, because you plan on, you're going to protect yourself.
When we look at...
You're going to go Rambo at the moment that you need to have this happen.
When somebody's attacking my car, you know, they want the Camry. I can hold them off.
There was another interesting story. He was talking about how, like, there's a... About how... Well, I thought this was a very interesting perspective. So this is a, you know... So someone who was very much, you know, very much into guns, you know, was carrying a gun at the time I was talking to them. And... They were mad that they said, you know, the thing he said, one of the things gets him the most angry is how hypocritical Hollywood is.
Sure.
He said, so you got all these people in Hollywood that are like all liberal and they want to take all your guns away and everything. But then like every single movie, Bruce Willis, like it glorifies
mowing
guns.
People down. Exactly. Absolutely.
So it's like, well, how can you like, how can you, or Star Wars, or pick any of them, like, or Avengers, or you know, just, I can't even, there's so many, you can't even, I can't even think of movies that don't have that in it. Except for maybe ones with Julia Roberts.
Violence, sex.
Right.
They tie all of those together.
Right. So, yeah, we don't want that kind of policy, but what we're going to do is we're going to basically feed it all with the entertainment that we're getting into. So I didn't mean to take us way off track, but I thought it was really interesting to talk with
professionals.
In law enforcement that deal with this every single day, that like they believe the biggest problems that we have is mental health.
Yeah.
And mental health ties into suicide, which kind of reinforces these numbers you're telling us, is that, you know, these are, and like the guy in Parkland, you know, if someone would have like, you know.
Yeah, would have done something.
Of the 37 times or whatever that there was an opportunity to do something, they would have done something, maybe that would not have happened.
And you and I have always said, we are not denying the role mental health plays in this problem.
Right.
The problem is, though, no candidate is going to win congressional or a governorship or the presidency writing their platform of what they're going to do to correct mental health in the United States.
Yeah, and it's really,
there's,
you know,
no political capital
there. It's very tangled in it too, because, you know, mental health, yeah, it's just too tangled. Because like, where does mental health end and start? Because
true.
Like, okay, if you got a kid in high school and they're on ADD medication, is that mental health?
And secondly, too.
And if they, or on any condition that's been diagnosed, and they're on treatment and they're taking their medication, are they also considered a mental health risk? You know, it's
complicated issue.
Complicated.
There's no political capital or political outcry for someone to tackle this. You're a candidate right now for running for Congress. There's no outcry to come up with your platform for mental health. My point is, it's just not something that's top of mind to American voters.
Yeah, I would say that it isn't, but I'm beginning to think that and then of course mental health also is the opioid thing too. So you got that whole, I mean, so it's really tangled and mixed up. But the one thing I did tell a couple folks I met with this week that I'm just trying to connect dots here is that, you know, we think of like the front lines of, you know, the threats to our country as being in, you know, parts of the Middle East or the next terrorist bombing or
our lack of steel production.
Well, or Mexico, like the people crossing the border and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, it occurred to me as I've been having all these meetings is that, you know, the people on the front lines are the people that run our public schools and protect us and the police force. Because, you know, they don't get to discriminate, you know, who they deal with.
Damn.
They're required by the courts to protect everyone or teach everybody.
It's a great point. And do we give them the resources what they need to deal.
We don't.
Like the cop who says, I got this strange guy at 3 a.m. in the middle of the street. What am I supposed to do with him?
Right. And it's, but he has to deal with
it. He has to deal with it.
Like, it's not like I can just, you know, roll over in bed and just go back to sleep and not worry about it because they'll be taken care of.
So my first argument against to this gun control crowd and to the, if I was arguing or talking with a Parkland student would be number one.
As a, as a right-leaning
absolutely
person.
I'm flipping my role.
This is the part where you're portraying the person.
Absolutely.
That, okay? You're acting. You're not doing
a good job of
acting, by the way.
I'm trying to understand all parts of the issue by understanding somebody else's point of view.
We're kind of role-playing it, aren't we?
We are.
So come on, Craig, you kind of right-leaning, like, you know, I don't know, conservative dude, tell me what you're thinking.
Mike, if that's the meanest you could be, no, that's all right.
I'm not usually
this is number one. You're arguing and you're protesting against something that is an emotional issue, but makes no real impact on actual gun violence. And I can point you to facts that we just went through that said, while I understand these things are tragic.
Let me give you a hard time, though. Fox is not going to that place.
Oh, they go that place every single day.
Oh, do they really?
You don't watch enough Fox News to make that comment, do you?
We've covered this topic quite often. I mean, this is the thing you do is listen and watch Fox News.
Well, I like if there's conservative people out listening to the podcast, they know who Ben Shapiro is. Ben Shapiro is a young conservative who is one of the fastest growing podcasts in the United States, and this is his fact base. And this is part of the argument. The Parkland kids are being used to make an emotional argument to ban a type of weapon that is only used in a fractional number of shootings within the United States. And if you understood the issue, what you would be going after is the mental illness that causes suicide. And you would be championing 45-year-old men, that these are the people that are being victimized most by guns, right? And that's what you would be talking about.
So just to be like conspiracy theorist, is this a distraction tactic then?
It's a trap, because I just laid that trap for you. Because let's say you suddenly agreed with me. Well, you're right. We do need to talk about handguns and suicide. And you're right. I don't want to ban assault bans rifles now. I want to ban handguns. That's where I'm going to point my rage at now.
Yeah.
That's where I want you to be. Because in 2008, in Heller versus District of Columbia,
right, it was already litigated.
Has been already adjudicated. 5-4 decision. Scalia wrote the majority opinion. They specifically said no state, no laws banning handguns.
This is kind of like, not to go into Stormy Daniels, but this is like all the scandalous stories we hear about the president. What do they call it? Buy and burn or buy and bury? Is that what this is? So in other words, you kind of, okay, fine. You bait me into this place. I land in the cul-de-sac and then you like cut off the cul-de-sac and I can't get out.
Well,
because
absolutely.
Now I'm stuck.
You're yelling all of this about assault rifles, which statistically don't account for much when it comes to homicides outside of the shocking, horrifying,
yeah, awful,
and
yeah.
Nobody is saying that they're not, but that is such a small percentage when you start breaking it down, that if you really wanted to start to impact gun violence, what you need to argue against is handguns. There's much more, the law then becomes on my side. But, and now I've boxed you in.
Right. Yeah, I don't, well, that's one view. I don't know if I agree with it completely, but.
The other thing too is what this leads me back to, and why some of these things are so hard to pass, is we're always looking for the smallest place to make an impact in the gun conversation, because I don't want to mess with the sanctity of the Second Amendment. Because if I go too far, now I got people really fired up. If I come out with like John Paul Stevens and say, we're going to repeal it.
That's stupid.
So what that does is it makes the argument smaller. Instead of arguing that, listen, guys, there's a ton of evidence. And what I just read out, we can prove guns are having a massive negative impact on America. We should do something about it. We stop at that. We start now at, well, it's this kind of gun, or it's that type of gun, or it's this type of population. My argument is that's the methodology I use to break your argument down. And that's why things don't move forward.
Well, and that's I can see that. And I can also see that. You know, I was joking around with someone earlier today, and I kind of was with you just before we started, is that, you know, to solve meaningful problems, it actually takes a fair amount of time.
Yeah.
I know that, but now, by the way, there is getting something done, and then there's like leadership in Congress of at least stating what their position is. That's, you know, so, you know, having a legislator move to a position to say, okay, I'm going to publicly say this is where I'm at, even though they can't maybe get those laws passed,
yeah,
or through whatever the system, whatever. I understand that piece of it, because that does take time, and it should. Although we kind of got shenanigans all the time now in Congress to kind of like, you know, end around all those things. But Yeah, it doesn't take long for someone to come out and say, well, I'm against this or for that. I mean, that, you know, you can do that in in an hour. It doesn't take any time to do that at all.
And two, this is what I think Second Amendment or our gun enthusiasts know, and this is the most depressing part. It doesn't matter what you do. This is a settled argument. There are 300 million guns already in circulation in the United States. Those guns, as a tool, have a shelf life of 200 to 300 years. Guns don't deteriorate like an aluminum can and suddenly go away.
And remembering cans is you can't destroy one anyway.
It's
against the law.
And in some places, you can't even destroy them. So what are we really arguing about?
Yeah.
300 million guns in a country of this size, the ability to sell them person to person.
And I think
we're going to deal with this issue for another 50 years if we stopped making guns today.
Yeah, and I think that there's still things that we can do.
There's things we can do.
There's things I've done in positions wise and people I've talked to. And I know, like I said, I thought this idea of this like 30-year mandatory sentence was kind of interesting.
Mandatory sentence that I can't stand. Because again, that will be misused against the weakest members of our society, is all mandatory sentences have done. We have so many people locked up on nonviolent marijuana charges because of mandatory sentences.
But I'm talking about, this is about using a handgun or a gun in a crime.
If one time a gun's planted by the cops and somebody goes to jail for 30 years.
Oh, okay. That's now when you're sitting down talking to someone in the police department, you don't want to bring that one up.
What's your driver's license? What's your license plate number there, Mr. McCammon? And what kind of car do you drive? Yeah. Really?
Well, you know, by the way, we did talk about that too, that there was, you know, I have a lot of empathy for folks that are in law enforcement. And I asked them, I said, you know, like when you go on a roll, does the database pop up and say, hey, five people live there that have the registered gun?
No. There's no national gun registry. There's no state gun registry.
I have empathy for these guys. Like, and gals that are in the police force, they're walking into a complete unknown.
You have no idea what's going on.
They have no idea where they're walking.
I would think most cops just assume everybody has a gun.
You probably have to. You're probably right.
I mean, that's why, again, if a cop ever pulls me over, yanks me out of the car and throws me in a ditch and puts his knee on and cuffs me, I just would assume he thinks I got a gun. Because everybody's got a gun.
I was surprised that they wouldn't have a database like that. And I asked them if it would be helpful. And they said, of course, it'd be complicated to implement. I'm not sure I'm going to register. And I said, you know what? The state of Kansas knows I have three cars in my garage.
Yeah, but when the revolution happens, they're not coming to your house for your Prius.
I'll tell you what.
They're coming for those guns, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Because, you know, but the thing is, I can use my Prius to get away from this government. So, I mean,
The other half.
There's the fight or flight.
Well.
And here's the thing.
You're going to flight from the government in your Prius. Good luck.
I get good mileage. I'm just picturing
you like driving away and some tank just rolls over your Prius.
Well, what I was going to point out is I think there should be a flight thought here because, you know, the government has, I mean, there is no amount of weaponry that I can own that would be able to stop the federal government from doing something in my home. I mean, they got drones, they got B-52s, they got stuff,
Mike,
they got
the
toys I don't got.
If the government wants into the two men in the middle studios, a.k.a. your basement, they're coming in here.
Right, and they're probably like a sniper rifle with
a red dot.
There's a red dot on your forehead.
But that's the other argument. If you took the most ardent Second Amendment person and they finally gave ground on all of that and said, you are correct, guns are devastating to the American society and culture and we must do something about them. Oh, but there's still the second half that I believe in, that one day the government will rise up as a tyrant and it is only my three guns in my basement and my neighbor's three guns that will keep liberty alive.
You know, I think that
let's talk about something else.
Yeah, I'm so tired of guns.
God, I'm tired of this. The kids, the Parkland kids, great speeches, great speakers. There's no way I could have strung four intelligent words together at 16 or 17. Some of that stuff. Some of it was certainly rehearsed. Some of that was theater. Somebody said to me that you got to love this because you got all these kids out there. And yeah, I do. I do. As a gun control person, yes, we're going to take advantage of every minute that we can make these kids relevant because they are so good at delivering this message. Yeah. Just like the NRA has their own TV channel and makes those videos that I find horrific that you think are awesome, this is our end of that spectrum.
By the way, I was reading part of that law about the arming the teachers or whatever in Kansas.
Yeah.
And the law, the bill. There was actually a section of it that was talking about they were going to place a gun safety book in K-8 locations that was like, and it was like, they gave the name, it was like, I don't know, it was like Billy Loves Guns from the NRA.
Marlon Bundo gets his gun.
Gomer Pyle. Something. It was.
Do you know who Marlon Bundo is? Have you missed that whole thing? Okay.
Who's Marlon Bundo? Is this a...
That was Mike Pence's rabbit book.
Yeah.
John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, they said, I was watching a little bit of Colbert and they had, I'm losing my brain now. They had, what's the name of the comedian that does, John Oliver.
John Oliver.
So they had a picture of John Oliver on and they said, you know, how, like a lot of times Colbert, and they do this also on The Daily Show, they like, this so-and-so also known for this, and like they kind of put into the humor of that. So they said, John Oliver, also by his code name, Cambridge Analytica. Which I thought was pretty classic.
I was listening to news today and I was in the car driving somewhere and the bump out of one news segment was, and if you think Facebook has got a bunch of data, wait till you hear how much Google has.
Like 100 times more data than
Facebook. 8 billion times more. I saw that Facebook was coming out with something now that was going to allow you to easily delete your account and delete all of your information.
Yeah. So right to be forgotten. It's actually required in the EU. So it's not like it's a new feature. It's just a new feature for schmucks that live in the US.
Well, we... the biggest
like us
damage I think that this has done to Facebook, I think April 15th or April 30th, they were planning on launching their own in-home speaker.
Yeah, I saw that. And they've canceled that plan.
They said, maybe now's not the right time do that.
Well, I'm sure they probably have a deal with Amazon to get all that data from Alexa, so they don't have to. Why would they waste their time doing their own speaker?
What would your Facebook speaker do for you more than your Echo or your Google Home?
It would be tied to your Facebook account. It would tell you, you have a new like.
Oh, God, that sounds awful.
So-and-so just commented on your post.
I think I am going to try to come up with a block of time each day that I just put my phone away from me and just don't even look at it.
Well, I'm surprised that someone hasn't tried to... Well, you would think that there is probably some entrepreneur out there or entrepreneurs that have basically been working on a Facebook alternative for years that doesn't have a lot of these same problems. That would be able to take advantage of this moment.
Well, there's one called Counter Social. But again, if you once you get 2 billion users and it becomes so ingrained into your life, I still think, too, most people look at this and say, still haven't found out what the big issue is. Somebody took my personal data. I give my personal data out all the time. I still don't get it.
I think a lot of people on Facebook, and they don't know of another way to get that same level of information from another source.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, because, you know, if you remember, you know, 20 years ago, and I remember 20 years ago, well, not 20 years ago, I'm lying, I'm overstating the number. It would have been 2000. So 18 years ago, I started blogging 18 years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm like, okay, it was pretty easy. You stand up a website, you get to write your own posts, you know, you have WordPress pretty easy. You can do WordPress.com nowadays. It's totally simple. So in other words, I could have my life on a website that's publicly available to lots of people, but like it doesn't have the same attraction or stickiness as something like Facebook, because most people can't set up their own website. Most people don't want to write anything.
No.
They just want to basically Snapchat. It was like, or Instagram. Here's a picture of me. I have enough attentive. My attention span is basically 8 words, and then I'm going to be the post and I'm going to be out of there. And then I'm not going to worry about trying to find these other people because the tool is going to serve these up. Hey, you know, these 5 people, here's 2 more people that are like them. So it definitely has done a great service to America.
The genie's out of the bottle. No one's going back. It's not going away. Yeah. Most people won't even care. They'll slap them on the wrist a little bit. Facebook will stick a few more options to secure your data.
No, they're going to bury a bunch more privacy controls.
They'll do the bare minimum to get by. They'll immediately start lobbying to get past that. I figured out where last week I said they could get like a $40 billion fine. Uh-huh. No, it's a $40 trillion fine.
Oh, wow.
Because they got busted in 2011 doing some of the same stuff. They made an agreement to get out of that with the FTC, Federal Trade Commission. Yeah. And in that 2011 agreement, that's where they imposed the fine.
Oh, really?
So they're in jeopardy of being fined because they got in trouble 7 years ago and they promised, you can really punish us if we do it again.
I mean, and this wasn't even on our list of topics today. We need to get to our last one because I'm going to start being the time watcher here.
But Mike might fall asleep at the mic tonight.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting down. Like, I never sit down when I do a podcast. I'm usually standing. But
This before. Running for Congress is kind of hard.
You know, it is kind of hard, and it's awful in a lot of ways. I mean, it's fantastic in terms of the people I get to meet and the energy of like people want change in my district and all that kind of stuff. It's great, but it's you either have to raise a ton of money and burn through a lot of it, or you figure out a way to kind of do it on your own. So I've been kind of doing it mostly, not entirely, but mostly on my own. And it's. You know, the pillow and I are not very familiar any longer. We don't know each other anymore. So, and not to want to admit this on the radio, but you know, I've gained like 4 pounds since I started doing this because the only way I make it through the day is, okay, let me see, what is the highest density calorie item that I can possibly eat or drink?
You literally, while I was like putting the mics up, you were like throwing a bag of chips, a handful of sausage, and some peanuts in your mouth. And you're like, I haven't eaten since like 11.
No, it was all day.
I haven't eaten all day. So let's get to the last topic where...
Miss Laura.
I kind of brought this one up to you today.
You caught me by surprise. I didn't get to do my research. So we're going to turn the floor over to Mr. Huey.
But this is one that hits you too, because we're going to take a marketing angle to this. So right. You guys...
Hit me.
Laura Ingraham of Fox News. Laura Ingraham,
And we all love Laura.
I think it was Wednesday. She came out with a tweet basically at David Hogg, who is the Parkland. He's the young man from Parkland who is really outspoken. He's the one who really gives it to the NRA all the time. Basically, sending out a tweet, basically making fun of him that he didn't get into the college that he wanted and called out his grades, which the kid has like a 4.2 on Twitter. So David Hogg and his sister... Basically today, and I picked this story up at like 8 a.m. today. So sometime this has not been out in the wild long. Basically, they said that crosses a line. You should not attack you shouldn't attack him in a personal way like that, which I agree with.
Well, you know, if you're out there, sometimes you gotta take the heat, but go ahead.
And David Hogg's response was he tweeted out to his 600,000 Twitter followers the top 12 advertisers of Laura Ingraham's show and basically said, hey, let's do a boycott of her advertisers and show her that we think that's inappropriate. As of 6 o'clock today, 4 of those advertisers have bailed on her show.
Wow.
So to me, I found that absolutely fascinating.
Well, now, so... Let me take you back from the cliff a little bit, because my sense would be is that there's a pretty good chance that those advertisers were probably thinking about leaving anyway, and this is kind of a convenient.
Three weeks ago, she told LeBron James to shut up and dribble.
Well, okay.
So she's already stepped into it once.
But maybe the same advertiser. Well, okay, that's fair.
Oh, by the way, LeBron James has 41 million Twitter followers. But. The point is, so to me, this is interesting on a whole bunch of different levels. Number one, you are correct. David Hogg has injected himself into the national discussion on one of our most heated debate points. Right. He should expect something to come his way. At the same time, Laura Ingraham is the adult in the room. Right. She is the media professional. She should know.
Yeah, don't cross that line.
Secondly, too, Laura Ingraham is an opinion... I was going to say she's an opinion host. I was going to say opinion journalist, but she's nowhere near what a journalist is. When you sit on a national televised show, she's an opinion celebrity. That's a great word. When you sit there and you give your opinion and you say things that necessarily are not grounded in fact, and day after day you talk about you know, I'm going to that whole Fox
second.
News
Wait
crowd.
A Are we opinion celebrities as well?
By the way, I'm getting a shirt made that said opinion celebrity. Or, as I like to call myself, the OC.
The OC.
When you're in that role and you have are given the latitude to give your types of opinions, you have to expect people are going to come at you.
Yeah.
I mean, her like, I can't believe this is happening. That's got to go.
Now, by the way, we don't want to risk any of our advertisers leaving too. So
oh, I know.
Let's be really careful here.
Don't want to mess with our revenue stream.
You know, and you know. By the way, like 2 weeks ago, we made a serious plug for Little Deb, and I'm surprised we didn't hear from them.
I can't.
It really got me disappointed.
If they're really capturing data and stuff, come on, Apple, steal some data from this podcast.
Exactly.
Get it in front of somebody at Little Debbie.
Text to speech this stuff. And
come
like make
on.
Sure that we get, or, I'm sorry, speech to text this stuff and get us some Debs.
The third thing that why this was so interesting to me is we've talked about millennials have laid waste to different markets at this point. In Kansas City, Harley-Davidson plant's closing. 800 people are losing their jobs. Harley's just come out and said, we can't figure out how to sell a motorcycle to somebody under the age of 50.
Right.
We can't incur young people simply are not buying motorcycles. The CEO of Applebee's and the CEO of Buffalo Wild Wings, Applebee's famously came out and said like a month ago, we're giving up on the millennial market. Hmm. We've tried everything to increase that. The CEO at Buffalo Wild Wings told his board, you can yell at me all you want, but I can't control the fact that 24-year-olds would rather join a meal plan club off the internet and stay home and make dinner. That's just a change in society that I can't get. So part of what's so interesting too is that's the millennials. Generation Z, I think, is even more of a mystery. I mean, how do you sell a product, or if I'm a Wayfair, Expedia, these are kind of travel sites, vacation sites, what is the impact of the average 7 or 18-year-old on family vacation?
Yeah,
I would argue with you, it's pretty darn high. I think this is a sign too that advertisers, they have no idea what to expect out of this generation that was digitally native coming up,
yeah.
And they're going to be very skittish about anything.
I mean,
they've
said, you know, this is something. There was a article that made the rounds, and I mean, this is 19. When was it? It was a Bluetooth. So 2002, 2003. It seems even more relevant today. Have you ever heard of a thing called the Clutrain Manifesto?
No.
I don't have it in front of me, but the basic, you can Google it, but the basic tenet of the Clutrain Manifesto is that marketing is dead and markets are conversations. And it's basically, you know, you can't do this the old fashioned way. You got to realize that these are conversations. And so, and then this kind of explains why Twitter's become such an important piece of like day-to-day marketing these days. But it's around how you engage your customers in meaningful conversation about your product. It's not about, okay, we're just going to like do some broadcast thing on the Super Bowl and catch everybody because that's going to go buy it.
Well, and if you are a media professional, if you are in the media,
mm-hmm.
One, you should know better. You absolutely should know better.
Well, now, is there a chance, that, again, just to be the conspiracy theorist here, are they doing it just for the sake of the average, I mean, for the publicity of doing it?
Who, David Hogg trying
no,
to kick
Laura,
her off the
air? Laura Ingraham is doing this. Basically, she did this knowing that there was some, you know, she did a calculation that, you know, we don't need those people anyway.
Well, sure.
So now two guys in the basement are talking about it.
Yeah. Her calculation was to my audience of 1.4 million people every night at Fox.
They're going
to
love this.
They're going to love this. This is going to play great to my base. And what she miscalculated was the ability that David Hogg has right now to influence in.
Well, you know, I was telling someone even today, there was a book I wanted to write a long time ago. I don't know if I've told you the story. It was going to be called The Rise of the Attentive Class.
No, you've not told me this.
I remember one time I was drawing this chart.
Then I've forgotten it.
Well, so it wasn't a very good story then. but the premise of this was that the people in our society that have the most power are the ones that have the most free time.
I don't know about that.
Well, so think about this. So right now, the algorithm that populates the news feed on news.google.com is curated by clicks.
Sure.
Right? Follow me, okay? The currency of the internet is eyeballs and clicks.
Yep.
All right. So who is driving the most clicks and stuff like that? It's people that have free time to read it. So like if you're a you know, 40-year-old person with two kids and soccer, and like you don't have time to like go on.
I'm a 40-year-old person with two kids and soccer, and I don't miss anything.
Okay, well, you're an exception. But if you're,
I don't think I am.
But if you're at either edges of the age cycle, so you're in high school or college, yeah, or you're retired or whatever, like, you know, you can spend quite a bit. You know, you have, you know, your lifestyle is different. You have more time to go, sure, and surf the web. So because the news is curated by clicks, and the currency of the web is attention. The most powerful people online are those that have the most disposable attention.
I would.
That's why when I go to news.google.com, I get Kardashian, because Kardashian is not news. That is not news at all.
But
that is just like,
I would change that to celebrity. The people that have the most power are the people who are able to generate the most attention.
Well, fair. And
David Hogg right now is at his zenith, perhaps, in his life.
Yeah,
of the amount of attention that he can garner.
Right.
And Laura Ingraham just made a miscalculation.
Yeah, go punch, because, him, in, yeah,
she
go
didn't,
punch him in the face.
Because she didn't understand that 17-year-old kid who has 600,000 Twitter followers, she didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
And she thought, there's nothing that he can do that's going to impact me, you know, 50-year-old, 30 years of experience, TV show at Fox News. She missed the axis of how much attention that kid could bring down on her.
Right. And of course, and then of course, the people that follow him are highly active on social.
Very active.
And the velocity of messaging,
absolutely,
on social as well as the web is, absolutely, much, much faster.
And I guarantee you, Laura Ingraham does not understand that sentence that you just said.
Right.
The velocity. So she's got to be sitting there tonight saying, I can't believe there's a chance my career as a commentator on TV could end because of that tweet. Then she came out and apologized. She did. Great apology, and by great, I'm being completely sarcastic, which the young gentleman came out and said, don't care. This is personal now. You don't attack people like that. Let's go get more of our sponsors.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about? We didn't talk about Stormy. I mean, that's usually kind of one of our other favorite topics. Wasn't
that
a big letdown?
Nothing. That was a big nothing burger.
It was a big nothing burger.
And in the podcasts and the folks that I've listened to, everybody has just said, hey, Trump is a scum. Everybody knows it.
He is a serial predator.
He has a problem with women. Everybody knows that. That's the conservative folks. The liberal side of this is, why are we focusing on the consensual porn star when we have 17 other women who have accused him of some form of assault?
Yeah, that's true.
So when do those people start getting the attention?
Also people saying, well, what about Russia and all the collusion and all the loans and all that stuff too? That's, and all the cover up and the election and et cetera.
It's just this slow building snowball that just keeps getting bigger. And it's either going to completely collapse under its own weight and there's going to be nothing there, or it's going to smash the house down. There's no other way it goes.
All right. Well, anything else you want to cover?
We kept this one at a time, didn't we, Mike?
We did. So, yeah, great. Thank you for listening to this week's podcast, and be sure to subscribe to your favorite store. Visit our website, the2minuttheminimal.com, for historical episodes and more about the podcast. Likewise, you can find us on Twitter at the2minuttheminimal for show updates and upcoming episodes. Thanks for stopping by and have a great week.